Chapter 14. The Escape. When Obsol and Yegi both left town, and Slos's doorkeeper refused me entrance, I knew it was time to turn to my enemies, for there was no more good in my friends. I went to Commissioner Shuskas and blackmailed him. Lacking sufficient cash to buy him with, I had to spend my reputation. Among the perfidious, the name of traitor is capital in itself. I told him that I was in Orgrin as agent of the nobles' faction in Carhide, which was planning the assassination of Tibby, and that he had been designated as my Sarf contact. If he refused to give me the information I needed, I would tell my friends in Erenrong that he was a double agent, serving the open trade faction, and this word would, of course, get back to Mishnori and to the Sarf. And the damned fool believed me. He told me quick enough what I wanted to know. He even asked me if I approved. I was not in immediate danger from my friends Obsol, Yegi, and the others. They had bought their safety by sacrificing the envoy, and trusted me to make no trouble for them or myself. Until I went to Shuskas, no one in the Sarf but Gam had considered me worthy their notice. But now they would be hard at my heels. I must finish my business and drop out of sight. Having no way to get word directly to anyone in Carhide, as mail would be read and telephone or radio listened to, I went for the first time to the Royal Embassy. Sardon Rem Irchenwich, whom I had known well at court, was on the staff there. He agreed at once to convey to Argovan a message stating what had become of the envoy and where he was to be imprisoned. I could trust Chenwich, a clever and honest person, to get the message through unintercepted, though what Argovan would make of it or do with it I could not guess. I wanted Argovan to have that information in case I's starship did come suddenly falling down out of the clouds, for at that time I still kept some hope that he had signaled the ship before the Sarf arrested him. I was now in peril, and if I had been seen to enter the embassy, in instant peril. I went straight from its door to the caravan port on the south side, and before noon of that day, Adstrath Susmi, I left Mishnori as I had entered it, as carry loader on a truck. I had my old permits with me, a little altered to fit the new job. Forgery of papers is risky in Orgrin, where they are inspected 52 times daily, but it is not rare for being risky. And my old companions in Fish Island had shown me the tricks of it. To wear a false name galls me, but nothing else would save me, or get me clear across the width of Orgrin to the coast of the Western Sea. My thoughts were all there in the west as the caravan went rumbling across the Kundera Ridge and out of Mishnori. Autumn was facing towards winter now, and I must get to my destination before the roads closed to fast traffic, and while there was still some good in getting there. I had seen a voluntary farm over in Kamvasom when I was in the Sinith administration and had talked with ex-prisoners of farms. What I had seen and heard lay heavy on me now. The envoy, so vulnerable to cold that he wore a coat when the weather was in the 30s, would not survive winter in Polithon. Thus need drove me fast, but the caravan took me slow, weaving from town to town northward and southward of the way, loading and unloading, so that it took me a half month to get to Ithwan at the mouth of the river Isigal. In Ithwan I had luck. Talking with men in the transient house, I heard of the fur trade up the river, how licensed trappers went up and down river by sledge or ice boat through Taranpath Forest, almost to the ice. Out of their talk of traps came my plan of trap springing. There are white fur pesthry in Kermland, as in the Gobrin hinterlands. They like places that lie under the breath of the glacier. I had hunted them when I was young in the Thor forests of Kerm. Why not go trapping them now in the Thor forests of Polithon? In that far west and north of Orgrin, in the great wild lands west of the Sembention, men come and go somewhat as they like, for there are not enough inspectors to keep them all penned in. Something of the old freedom survives the new epoch there. Ithwan is a gray port built on the gray rocks of Isigal Bay. A rainy sea wind blows in the streets, and the people are grim seamen, straight-spoken. I look back with praise to Ithwan, where my luck changed. I bought skis, snowshoes, traps, and provisions, acquired my hunter's license and authorization and identification and so forth from the Commensal Bureau, and set out afoot up the Isigal with a party of hunters led by an old man called Mavriva. The river was not yet frozen, and wheels were on the road still, for it rained more than it snowed on this coastal slope, even now in the year's last month. Most hunters waited till full winter, and in the month of Thern went up the Isigal by ice boat. But Mavriva meant to get far north early and trap the pestry as they first came down into the forests in their migration. Mavriva knew the hinterlands, the North Sumbension and the Fire Hills, as well as any man knows them. And in those days, going upriver, I learned much from him that served me later. At the town called Turuf, I dropped out of the party, feigning illness. They went on north, after which I struck out northeastward by myself into the high foothills of the Sumbension. I spent some days learning the land, and then, caching almost all I carried in a hidden valley 12 or 13 miles from Turuf, I came back to the town, approaching it from the south again, and this time entered it and put up at the transient house. As if stocking up for a trapping run, I bought skis, snowshoes and provisions, a fur bag and winter clothing, all over again. Also a chubby stove, a polyskin tent, and a light sledge to load it all on. Then nothing to do but wait for the rain to turn to snow and the mud to ice. Not long, for I had spent over a month on my way from Mishnori to Turuf. On Arhad Thurn, the winter was frozen in, and the snow I had waited for was falling. I passed the electric fences of Pullifan Farm in early afternoon, all track and trace behind me soon covered by the snowfall. I left the sledge in a stream gully well into the forest east of the farm, and carrying only a backpack, snowshoed back around to the road. Along it, I came openly to the farm's front gate. There I showed the papers, which I had reforged again while waiting in Turuf. They were a blue stamp now, identifying me as Thenner Benth, paroled convict, and attached to them was an order to report on or before Epps Thurn to Pullifan Commensality, 3rd Voluntary Farm, for 2 years guard duty. A sharp-eyed inspector would have been suspicious of those battered papers, but there were few sharp eyes here. Nothing easier than getting into prison. I was somewhat reassured as to the getting out. The chief guard on duty berated me for arriving a day later than my orders specified and sent me to the barracks. Dinner was over, and luckily it was too late to issue me regulation boots and uniform and confiscate my own good clothing. They gave me no gun, but I found one handy while I scrounged around the kitchen, coaxing the cook for a bite to eat. The cook kept his gun hung on a nail behind the bake ovens. I stole it. It had no lethal setting. Perhaps none of the guards' guns did. They do not kill people on their farms. They let hunger and winter and despair do their murders for them. There were 30 or 40 jailkeepers and 150 or 60 prisoners, none of them very well off, most of them sound asleep, though it was not much past fourth hour. I got a young guard to take me around and show me the prisoners asleep. I saw them in the staring light of the great room they slept in, and all but gave up my hope of acting that first night before I had drawn suspicion on myself. They were all hidden away on the long beds in their bags like babies in wombs, invisible, indistinguishable, all but one. There, too long to hide, a dark face like a skull, eyes shut and sunken, a mat of long, fibrous hair. The luck that had turned in Ithwan now turned the world with it under my hand. I never had a gift but one, to know when the great wheel gives to a touch, to know and act. I had thought that foresight lost last year in Erenrang, and never to be regained. A great delight it was to feel that certainty again, to know that I could steer my fortune and the world's chance like a bobsled down the steep, dangerous hour. A great delight it was to feel that certainty again, to know that I could steer my fortune and the world's chance like a bobsled down the steep, dangerous hour. Since I still went roaming and prying about in my part as a restless, curious, dim-witted fellow, they wrote me on to the late watch shift. By midnight, all but I and one other late watcher within doors slept. I kept up my shiftless poking about the place, wandering up and down from time to time by the long beds. I settled my plans and began to ready my will and body to enter Dothi, for my own strength would never suffice unaided by the strength out of the dark. A while before dawn, I went into the sleeping room once more, and with the cook's gun gave Genli I 1/100 second of stun to the brain, then hoisted him up, bag and all, and carried him out over my shoulder to the guard room. "What's doing?" says the other guard, half asleep. "Let him be." "He's dead." "Another one dead? By Meshi's guts, and not hardly winter yet." He turned his head sideways to look into the envoy's face as it hung down on my back. "That one, the pervert it is, by the eye. I didn't believe all they say about car hiders till I took a look at him, the ugly freak he is. He spent all week on the long bed moaning and sighing, but I didn't think he'd die right off like that. Well, go dump him outside where he'll keep till daylight. Don't stand there like a carry loader with a sack of turds." I stopped by the inspection office on my way down the corridor, and I, being the guard, none stopped me from entering and looking till I found the wall panel that contained the alarms and switches. None was labeled, but guards had scratched letters beside the switches to jog their memory when haste was needed. Taking FF for fences, I turned that switch to cut the current to the outermost defenses of the farm, and then went on, pulling I along now by the shoulders. I came by the guard on duty in the watchroom by the door. I made a show of laboring to haul the dead load, for the Dothi strength was full within me, and I did not want it seen how easily, in fact, I could pull or carry the weight of a man heavier than myself. I said, "A dead prisoner. They said get him out of the sleeping room. Where do I stow him?" "I don't know. Get him outside. Under a roof so he won't get snowberried and float up stinking next spring in the thaws. It's snowing, Padisha." He meant that we call sove snow, a thick, wet fall. The best of news to me. All right," I said, and lugged my load outside and round the corner of the barracks out of his sight. I got I up over my shoulders again, went northeast a few hundred yards, clambered up over the dead fence, and slung my burden down, jumped down free, took up I once more, and made off as fast as I could towards the river. I was not far from the fence when a whistle began to shriek and the floodlights went on. It snowed hard enough to hide me, but not hard enough to hide my tracks within minutes. Yet when I got down to the river, they were not yet on my trail. I went north on clear ground under the trees, or through the water when there was no clear ground. The river, a hasty little tributary of the Isigal, was still unfrozen. Things were growing plain now in the dawn, and I went fast. In full Dothi, I found the envoy, though a long, awkward load, no heavy one. Following the stream into the forest, I came to the ravine where my sledge was. And onto the sledge I strapped the envoy, loading my stuff around and over him till he was well hidden, and a weather sheet over all. Then I changed clothes and ate some food from my pack, for the great hunger one feels in long-sustained Dothi was already gnawing at me. Then I set off north, on the main forest road. Before long, a pair of skiers came up with me. I was now dressed and equipped as a trapper, and told them that I was trying to catch up with Mavriva's outfit, which had gone north in the last days of Grendi. They knew Mavriva and accepted my story after a glance at my trapper's license. They were not expecting to find the escaped men heading north, for nothing lies north of Pulafin but the forest and the ice. They were perhaps not very interested in finding the escaped men at all. Why should they be? They went on, and only an hour later passed me again on their way back to the farm. One of them was the fellow I had stood late watch with. He had never seen my face, though he had had it before his eyes half the night. When they were surely gone, I turned off the road and all that day followed a long half-circle back through the forest and the foothills east of the farm, coming in at last from the east, from the wilderness, to the hidden dell above Turuf where I had cached all my spare equipment. It was hard sledging in that much-folded land, with more than my weight to pull. But the snow was thick and already growing firm, and I was in Dothi. I had to maintain the condition, for once one lets the Dothi strength lapse, one is good for nothing at all. I had never maintained Dothi before for over an hour or so, but I knew that some of the old men can keep in the full strength for a day and a night, or even longer, and my present need proved a good supplement to my training. In Dothi, one does not worry much, and what anxiety I had was for the envoy, who should have waked long ago from the light dose of sonic I had given him. He never stirred, and I had no time to tend to him. Was his body so alien that what to us is mere paralysis was death to him? When the wheel turns under your hand, you must watch your words, and I had twice called him dead, and carried him as the dead are carried. The thought would come that this was then a dead man that I hauled across the hills, and that my luck and his life had gone to waste after all. At that I would sweat and swear, and the Dothi strength would seem to run out of me like water out of a broken jar. But I went on, and the strength did not fail me till I had reached the cache in the foothills and set up the tent and done what I could for I opened a box of hyper-food cubes, most of which I devoured, but some of which I got into him as a broth, for he looked near to starving. There were ulcers on his arms and breast, kept raw by the filthy sleeping bag he lay in. When these sores were cleansed and he lay warm in the fur bag, as well hidden as winter and wilderness could hide him, there was no more I could do. Night had fallen, and the greater darkness, the payment for the voluntary summoning of the body's full strength, was coming hard upon me. To darkness I must entrust myself and him. We slept. Snow fell. All the night and day and night on my Thangan sleep it must have snowed. No blizzard, but the first great snowfall of winter. When at last I roused and pulled myself up to look out, the tent was half buried. Sunlight and blue shadows lay vivid on the snow. Far and high in the east, one drift of gray dimmed the sky's brightness. The smoke of Udanashriki, nearest to us of the Fire Hills. Around the little peak of the tent lay the snow, mounds, hillocks, swells, slopes, all white, untrodden. Being still in the recovery period, I was very weak and sleepy, but whenever I could rouse myself, I gave I broth, a little at a time. And in the evening of that day he came to life, if not to his wits. He sat up crying out as if in great terror. When I knelt by him, he struggled to get away from me, and the effort being too much for him, fainted. That night he talked much, in no tongue I knew. It was strange in that dark stillness of the wilds to hear him mutter words of a language he had learned on another world than this. The next day was hard, for whenever I tried to look after him, he took me, I think, for one of the guards at the farm, and was in terror that I would give him some drug. He would break out into Argata and Karhaidish, all babbled pitifully together, begging me not to, and he fought me with a panic strength. This happened again and again, and as I was still in Thangan and weak of limb and will, it seemed I could not care for him at all. That day I thought that they had not only drugged, but mind-changed him, leaving him insane or imbecile. Then I wished that he had died on the sledge in the Thor forest, or that I had never had any luck at all, but had been arrested as I left Mishnori and sent to some farm to work out my own damnation. I woke from sleep, and he was watching me. Estervan? He said in a weak, amazed whisper. Then my heart lifted up. I could reassure him and see to his needs, and that night we both slept well. The next day he was much improved and sat up to eat. The sores on his body were healing. I asked him what they were. I don't know. I think the drugs caused them. They kept giving me injections. To prevent Kemmer? That was one report I had heard from men escaped or released from voluntary farms. Yes, and others. I don't know what they were. Theridicals of some kind. They made me ill. And they kept giving them to me. What were they trying to find out? What could I tell them? They may have not so much been questioning as domesticating you. Domesticating? Rendering you docile by a forced addiction to one of the Orgravy derivatives. That practice is not unknown in Carhide. Or they may have been carrying out an experiment on you and the others. I have been told they test mind-changing drugs and techniques on prisoners in the farms. I doubted that when I heard it. Not now. You have these farms in Carhide? In Carhide, I said. No. He rubbed his head fretfully. They'd say in Mishnori that there are no such places in Orgrin, I suppose. On the contrary, they'd boast of them, and show you tapes and pictures of the voluntary farms, where deviates are rehabilitated, and vestigial tribal groups are given refuge. They might show you around the First District voluntary farm just outside Mishnori, a fine showplace from all accounts. If you believe that we have farms in Carhide, Mr. I, you overestimate us seriously. We are not a sophisticated people. He lay a long time staring at the glowing chobby stove, which I had turned up till it gave out suffocating heat. Then he looked at me. You told me this morning, I know, but my mind wasn't clear, I think. Where are we? How did we get here? I told him again. You simply walked out with me? Mr. I, any one of you prisoners, or all of you together, could have walked out of that place any night. If you weren't starved, exhausted, demoralized, and drugged, and if you had winter clothing, and if you had somewhere to go. There's the catch. Where would you go? To a town? No papers, you're done for. Into the wilderness? No shelter, you're done for. In summer, I expect they bring more guards into Pulafin Farm. In winter, they use winter itself to guard it. He was scarcely listening. You couldn't carry me 100 feet, Estravan, let alone run, carrying me a couple of miles cross-country in the dark. I was in Dothi. He hesitated. Voluntarily induced? Yes. You are one of the Handarata? I was brought up in the Handara, and indwelt 2 years at Rothera Fastness. In Kermland, most people of the Inner Hearths are Handarata. I thought that after the Dothi period, the extreme drain on one's energy necessitated a sort of collapse. Yes, Thangan, it's called. The dark sleep. It lasts much longer than the Dothi period. And once you enter the recovery period, it's very dangerous to try to resist it. I slept straight through 2 nights. I'm still in Thangan now. I couldn't walk over the hill. And hunger's part of it. I've eaten up most of the rations I'd planned to last me the week. All right, he said with peevish haste. I see. I believe you. What can I do but believe you? Here I am, here you are, but I don't understand. I don't understand what you did all this for. At that, my temper broke, and I must stare at the ice knife which lay close by my hand, not looking at him and not replying until I had controlled my anger. Fortunately, there was not yet much heat or quickness in my heart. And I said to myself that he was an ignorant man, a foreigner, ill-used and frightened. So I arrived at justice and said finally, I feel that it is in part my fault that you came to Orgrin, and so to Pulafin Farm. I am trying to amend my fault. You had nothing to do with my coming to Orgrin. Mr. I, we've seen the same events with different eyes. I wrongly thought they'd seem the same to us. Let me go back to last spring. I began to encourage King Argovan to wait, to make no decision concerning you or your mission, about a half month before the day of the ceremony of the Keystone. The audience was already planned, and it seemed best to go through with it, though without looking for any results from it. All this I thought you understood, and in that I erred. I took too much for granted. I didn't wish to offend you, to advise you. I thought you understood the danger of Pemerhagirem Itibi's sudden ascendancy in the Kiremi. If Tibi had known any good reason to fear you, he would have accused you of serving a faction. And Argovan, who is very easily moved by fear, would likely have had you murdered. I wanted you down and safe while Tibi was up and powerful. As a chance, I went down with you. I was bound to fall, though I didn't know it would be that very night we talked together. But no one is Argovan's prime minister for long. After I received the order of exile, I could not communicate with you, lest I contaminate you with my disgrace, and so increase your peril. I came here to Orgrin. I tried to suggest to you that you should also come to Orgrin. I urged the men I distrusted least among the 33 commensals to grant you entry. You would not have got it without their favor. They saw, and I encouraged them to see, in you a way towards power, a way out of the increasing rivalry with Carhide, and back towards the restoration of open trade, a chance perhaps to break the grip of the Sarf. But they are overcautious men, afraid to act. Instead of proclaiming you, they hid you, and so lost their chance, and sold you to the Sarf to save their own pelts. I counted too much on them, and therefore the fault is mine. But for what purpose all this intriguing, this hiding and power-seeking and plotting? What was it all for, Estravan? What were you after? I was after what you're after, the alliance of my world with your worlds. What did you think? We were staring at each other across the glowing stove like a pair of wooden dolls. You mean, even if it was Orgrin that made the alliance? Even if it was Orgrin. Carhide would soon have followed. Do you think I would play Shifgathor when so much is at stake for all of us, all my fellow men? What does it matter which country wakens first, so long as we waken? How the devil can I believe anything you say? He burst out. Bodily weakness made his indignation sound aggrieved and whining. If all this is true, you might have explained some of it earlier, last spring, and spared us both a trip to Polithon. Your efforts on my behalf have failed, and have put you in pain and shame and danger. I know it, but if I had tried to fight Tibby for your sake, you would not be here now. You'd be in a grave in Erenrong. And there are now a few people in Carhide, and a few in Orgrin, who believe your story because they listen to me. They may yet serve you. My greatest error was, as you say, in making myself clear to you. I'm not used to doing so. I am not used to giving or accepting either advice or blame. I don't mean to be unjust, Estravan, yet you are. It is strange. I am the only man in all Gethin that has trusted you entirely, and I am the only man in Gethin that you have refused to trust. He put his head in his hands. He said at last, I'm sorry, Estravan. It was both apology and admission. The fact is, I said, that you're unable or unwilling to believe in the fact that I believe in you. I stood up, for my legs were cramped, and found I was trembling with anger and weariness. Teach me your mind speech, I said, trying to speak easily and with no rancor. Your language that has no lies in it. Teach me that, and then ask me why I did what I've done. I should like to do that, Estravan.